Hello, you're listening to a podcast by Speak Up Radio, sharing some of the features and interviews we've done with inspiring people and organisations across London. Here, you'll get all the chat, insights and information, but you won't get any of the music, and that's because of how licensing works. To get the full experience, tune into the radio station 24/7 by visiting www.advocacyproject.org.uk/speakupradio. This work has been supported by Imperial Health Charity.
Hello and welcome to Speak Up Radio. My name is Simon. I'm a volunteer with the Drug and Alcohol Services in London, here in the boroughs of Hammersmith, Kensington and Westminster. And I'm joined today by my co-presenter, Billy. Billy, hello.
Hi, nice to be here.
Would you like to introduce yourself?
My name's Billy and I'm a service user with the Drug and Alcohol Services as well. And I'm here to support Simon for this fabulous radio station.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And our program today is about the choice between the approaches to recovery, specifically between 12-step, which is the most well-known of which is Alcoholics Anonymous, but also it also has a number of other branches covering other forms of addiction. And CBT, which is cognitive behavioral therapy-based approaches, such as Smart Recovery, there's another one called 5-step. And it's not always easy for people in the early stages of recovery to make an informed choice between the two approaches, which have some common themes, but also some significant differences. Mm-hmm. And what we're looking to do today is to help any of you out there in that position to make an informed choice. So our first guest today is Christina, who is a member of the 12-Step Fellowship and helps facilitate meetings in London and beyond online. Welcome, Christina.
Thanks very much for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. So to start, how might people who are worried about their own behaviour consider the question, is it time to do something about it, like, for example, joining a group?
Sure, thanks very much. Firstly, I want to say that I'm not an expert in this field, but I'm somebody who has struggled with many addictions and alcohol issues with alcohol. So I'm coming from a perspective of a member of the fellowship and somebody who has maintained sobriety now for 7 years.
Wonderful.
So this is based on being in 12-step fellowships as well for about 10 years. So how would one know if 12-step recovery might help them? I think if you repeatedly do something more, so drink or take something that you don't want to, so if you were doing more of something than you intend to or want to, and if you get yourself in trouble when you do those things, you may be an alcoholic or an addict. And we in Alcoholics Anonymous and other 12-step fellowships very much say that we don't make those decisions for anybody, that it's really up to that person to be able to decide for themselves. So no one in 12-step fellowships can really tell you whether or not you have a problem with alcohol or with drugs or other addiction, other compulsive behaviors. There's lots of literature in 12-step fellowships that are really helpful around answering those questions, and there are indicators. I know there's a pamphlet around now that you've stopped, 15 points to consider whether or not you might need a 12-step fellowship. So how did I know whether or not I needed it? Is because I was doing things that I didn't want to be doing anymore, and I could not stop drinking and taking drugs, and I needed another solution. I was not able to get the help that I felt that I needed from other areas, from doctors, from family. I had really exhausted all of those means. And I think that's an important point to make, is that many of us who come to 12-step fellowships have really exhausted all of the other means. And we often say for ourselves, it's kind of the end of the road, the end of the line. And that's when a 12-step fellowship can often be very helpful for people. We wouldn't want to see members not being a part of it if they don't need it, if they would be able to resolve their issue through medical treatment, through psychological treatment. 12-step fellowships are for people perhaps who are still compulsively involved in behaviours and process addictions that they don't want to be.
So would a fair summary be, I feel the need to change, but I'm not sure I'm capable of doing it by myself?
Yes, yes. And if somebody, yes, if they were compulsively overshooting something. So for me, if I would drink, I was not able to stop at one or two drinks. And it was a persistent pattern. That's part of it as well. There's all sorts of types of alcoholics and addicts in 12-step fellowships. Some people are binge drinkers. So it's only maybe on the weekends. Some people waking up in the morning and drinking all day, depending. But the issue is when it becomes out of control. And we talk about step one in 12-step fellowships, that we are powerless over the substance and our lives have become unmanageable. And the unmanageability is my life might be unmanageable externally. So, for example, maybe if I'm having problems with substances, might be having issues with family and turning up to work on time. But the unmanageability is that I don't actually know the next time I'm going to drink or take a drug. That's what makes my life unmanageable.
Thank you. And how would you characterize broadly the approach of 12-step programs towards recovery?
Yeah, great. Thank you for asking. Great question. So what would characterize it is really, for me, it's quite a structured approach. And from before, I see others in recovery as well, often coming in and they need, and I've benefited from a lot of structure. So it's very much based on 12-step model. And there are 12 steps and it goes in a structured way. And as somebody who doesn't often like to follow rules, which is a real characteristic of a lot of addicts and alcoholics, say number one characteristic is our defiance, don't often like to follow order and rules. In this case, to be able to save our lives, interestingly, we do follow the structure of going from step one to step 12 in generally in that order. So it's not just, I must say, it's not just the 12 steps that is going to keep me sober. That's a really important process to be able to go through that systematic way of addressing my addictions and alcoholism, it promises me this what we call sort of a spiritual awakening. And that can be just a different way of thinking about things and a different way of existing and living, because my way didn't work. My way did not work. And I got myself into a lot of problems. So it's 12-step structure plus meetings of the 12-step fellowship that you're a part of, service.
Let's just pause for a second. We'll just pause for a second while the emergency
goes by.
Thank you. That is interesting. Tell me, what is the role of faith in 12-step?
That is a question that's asked a lot, and people often say that there's a lot of talk about God, isn't there? They're a bit unsure about 12-step fellowships because that. And the majority, I must say, of people in 12-step believe, and we've found that the solution to our problem, our drinking or drug problem or compulsive behavior, is not through lack of individual willpower, but we need to really rely on something outside of ourselves, a higher power. And that's not religious. Some people think about it as nature. Some people think about it as actually the group. We talk about it like G.O.D., a group of drunks, but we realize that actually if we're relying only on our own willpower, that hasn't worked for us very well. So by tapping into some sort of universal energy, I would say we are able to keep sober and live pretty good lives, actually. And in that way, for me, and for a lot of the people that I perhaps sponsor, we haven't talked about sponsorship, they've not been able to find a solution any other way. So we're not a religious organization. It is spiritual. I think it's very congruent now with the way that the world is going. There's a lot of interest in it.
Thank you. And could you talk a little about sponsors?
Yes, I have a sponsor and I sponsor. it's part of, you've asked about the structure of 12-step fellowships. Big part of it is around service. So we really give service to each other. And part of that is through sponsorship. A sponsor is somebody who helps to guide me through the 12 steps. I can do it alone. We have a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And there are usually books for other 12-step fellowships as well. It gives instructions about how to go through the 12 steps. And it's just very helpful to have a guide. A sponsor's really a guide, helps me to settle into the fellowship. I can call them, ask them questions, and I run things through them because sometimes, particularly when I was very new in, I was quite an ill woman when I came in and I needed some support and a bit of guidance.
Thank you. So tell us a little more about how are 12-step meetings typically structured? Meetings themselves.
Yeah, please come and join a 12-step fellowship meeting at any time. Everybody's welcome to an open meeting. So you can come and observe and be a part of that. But it's structured with usually a speaker at the start, and they might speak. It's usually an hour to an hour and a half meetings. Speaker at the start that will share their experience, strength, and hope about how they achieved sobriety in whatever fellowship they're in, and their hopes for the future and how to sort of sustain that sobriety. And then there's opportunities, the floor is opened, and often people then share back on points of identification. And why do we do that? We're often asked, why do you keep going to these meetings year after year after year when you're already sober? Is that we believe that we have an illness of body and mind, and it's something that tells me I don't have it. So experience shows us that by keeping together and by just recapping it and being able to share our experience with others does keep us sober in the longer term. We find that people who don't attend meetings in the longer term have a much less likelihood of staying sober. So meetings are just one part of 12-step fellowships.
I think it's good for people at an early stage in their journey to have in the meeting people who are a little further on and whom it's helped. To my mind, that gives hope and gives encouragement.
It does, and it was really important to me, and I try to relay that forward now to other mostly women. We have something in the fellowship where, you know, women often stick with the women and men stick with the men for good reason in the beginning until we start to become, you know, well. And it was really important for me to be with women who, like a sponsor, but then just other fellows, other people in fellowship who were further down the line than me and that I could see were active citizens in the community, who are active participants in their world. Often when we give up this drug or of choice or alcohol, we can struggle. And that's that when we struggle, then we can return to alcohol or drugs because we want to really change the way that we feel. I didn't know how to operate in the world without it. So I needed a lot of guidance and a lot of fellowship to be able to learn how to live as a sober, dignified, poised woman And as they say, sometimes it takes a village. and for a lot of us, it does. People come in different stages as well. But to know really for your listeners that I was told, and I say it to others, is that you're no longer alone. Addiction and alcoholism can be a very, very lonely illness. And there are millions of us in the world now. You are not alone. And if you come into a 12-step fellowship, the support is there for you.
Thank you. Billy, I think you had a couple of questions.
I did, and I think you've answered some of them, but let's have a go. How do individuals contribute to meetings? Do they primarily listen or actively participate?
Thank you. We love participation. We love people to be able to come along and to be able to participate. And we often have a lot of service positions that are available to be able to get people involved. Often when we have people that are involved, they feel more welcome to be able to come back to the group. So we have positions in live meetings, usually of somebody making tea or greeting, to be able to make people feel comfortable. We're also a fellowship where there are no dues or fees, so it doesn't cost anything to be able to come to 12-step fellowships. So we really all just volunteers supporting each other to be able to run these meetings, to be able to stay sober. And it's been working for many, many years now.
Do participants typically get together to socialize outside of meetings?
Yeah, and I think this is a really important point. People who, I talk for myself as well, people who come into 12-step fellowships are often quite ostracized from family or friends. And to be able to come into a fellowship and to be able to really feel that other people understand you, it's something, unless you've experienced it, it's really hard to describe. We talk about it like this coming home feeling. When you come to your first meeting, you just realize you've come home. And so we are really a fellowship of people who would not normally mix. When you come to a meeting of 12-step fellowships, you've got people from all areas of society, all nationalities, all ages, genders, professional roles. It's quite incredible. And when we come together, though, we have one primary purpose, is to stay sober and help another person to be able to maintain their sobriety as well. So we do often have fellowship outside, and I found that a really important part of it as well. I do a lot of outreach, and we encourage each other to outreach on the telephone, maybe go get a coffee with somebody after a meeting. My home group, we go out for dinner. That's on a Friday evening. We go out for dinner afterwards. You get to know people. It's also really important as well. We miss each other. So if somebody doesn't come to a meeting, actually we worry about them, and we might call them to see where they are. But you find the people eventually that maybe you have a bit more in common with. But sometimes that commonality really is your recovery, because the rest of the external world is very different, but we share that commonality.
Thank you.
Christina, thank you. I think that's given us a real insight. Finally, could you suggest a piece of music and give us the reasons for your choice?
Yes, I can. And I chose Life is a Highway by Rascal Flatts. And why did I choose it? I think it gives me this expansive feel. And once I've come into 12-step fellowship, I really do feel that life is a highway. I have no idea the twists and turns that are going to happen each day. Everything is exciting, and I don't really know what is around the corner. Getting sober is really just a start in life, and 12-step fellowship helps me to be able to do that in combination with all of the things that I've talked about. So I'm excited for the future as a sober woman at 7 years, and I see so many others staying sober and as I said, leading really, really worthwhile lives with families back, children back in their lives, work that they enjoy, and I wish everybody else a great journey on their highway.
Thank you very much indeed. Thank you for your time today. Much appreciated.
Thank you.
Welcome back to Speak Up Radio, where we are discussing the alternative approaches to group therapy to help people make informed choices about their own recovery paths. We're now joined by Dr. Charlie Orton, who is the Chief Executive of Smart UK, a CBT-based program running groups for both people in recovery and for their families and friends, support for whom is the subject of another of these broadcasts. Charlie, welcome.
Hello.
Hello. Let's start then. How would you characterise the approach of CBT based programs and SMART in particular towards recovery?
Okay, hi, thank you, Simon. Okay, so if we think about what CBT is, it's cognitive behavioral therapy. And the way it approaches, in particular, people who wish to gain recovery from addiction, is it very much starts with the cognitive process of behavior. So if you think of the word cognitive, it usually means the mind and what happens in our cognition, so our thoughts and our feelings. And CBT very much helps you to understand how thoughts and feelings are formed in your mind, and then how those thoughts and feelings are manifested physically in your body, and then the choices you make around the behaviours that are centred around those thoughts and feelings. So it's cognitive in that it teaches people about thoughts and how the brain works. It's behavioural in teaching people how those thoughts and feelings manifest themselves in behaviours. And then it's a therapeutic-based approach, which essentially comes from a position of compassion, empathy and understanding. And the therapy enables people in SMART to learn about the brain and how it functions quite scientifically. So there's quite a strong scientific basis to it, because we know the brain is a mass of cells which has electromagnetic properties and electricity, for want of a better word, running through it. We also know that part of that process are the triggers of hormones or chemicals in the brain. And essentially there's a trigger and a process that your brain will go through to essentially make you feel good or feel better. So CBT starts with the mind and what happens in the brain, both on a hormonal and chemical level, and also with your thoughts. It moves that into how your physical body then reacts. And that can be in the form of a raised heart rate or a panic or an urge or a craving for something or a feeling of sadness that you want to go away. And then how do those feelings elicit a behavior in you? So SMART stands for Self-Management and Recovery Training. And when you come into SMART, as come into the program, the very first stage is that you're taught the kind of scientific basis of what's happening to your body and your thoughts and your feelings. We then use that science to help to teach you how you can then begin to look at those behaviours and understand where they're coming from, how you can have the power to change those behaviours if you want to. And it's quite complicated in a way, because we're human beings and everyone's different. But if you follow the kind of basic rules of CBT, and if you have an understanding of what's happening with you physiologically, you can then begin to learn how to change those learned behaviours. So we see addiction as not a disease and not something that someone is afflicted by, that there's a power of choice and that power comes from within you. And through education and training, we teach you how to look at what's happening in your life, how to manage your thoughts, feelings, change your behaviours in order to live a more balanced life.
Thank you. And how are SMART meetings typically structured?
Okay, so a SMART meeting is very similar to any other mutual aid or group type therapy or meeting that many people may have heard of before. They typically last between an hour and an hour and a half. They are run by a trained facilitator and sometimes a co-facilitator, and there will be a group of varying sizes. Some of our groups are maybe four people, others are much bigger, 50 plus people, but they tend to be run as a group in a group setting. And during that hour or 90 minutes, the trained facilitator will allow people to enter into the meeting, whether it's face-to-face or online. And it usually starts with a short welcome. And then, like many other mutual aid recovery meetings, there's an opening statement. And the opening statement reminds everybody why we're here, what we're seeking to get out of the session, generally speaking, how we would like the group to interact with each other and behave, and some various etiquettes that we would like people to adhere to when they're in the meeting. We need to make sure that everybody's safe and secure, and that we minimise the risk of really triggering somebody in a negative way. So the opening statement lays out the expectations or how everybody would like the meeting to go. And then the facilitator will ask each person in the group to do what we call a check-in. So during that check-in, each person is able to say hello to the group. Some of them might be new. Some people might be well-versed in it and been going a long time. So it's an opportunity to introduce yourself. Some people like to say why they're there, others don't. And then if it's a weekly meeting, it's how's life been for you over the last week, or how has life been, since we maybe have last seen you? And people will offer varying degrees of information. Some people, if it's a particularly bad day, will just say, hello, my name's Charlie, I just need to listen today. Or it's taken me an awful lot just to get here. And once the check-in's completed, the facilitator, through various different ways, will establish with the group what topic to discuss, or they might pick a certain tool. So within the SMART program, there are four points or chapters, and within those chapters, there are various tools or methods that people can use to help them. Imagine it's like a toolbox with four drawers in it, and each one is our 4 points. And depending on what you need, or how your week's been, or where you're at in your recovery, you'll open a particular drawer and select a tool from within it to help you on any particular given day or week. So the facilitator will gain a consensus, if you like, from the group as to how to approach the meeting. It might be that a certain tool was discussed last week and we want to revisit it. It might be that somebody in the group has tried something and it's really worked well or not so well, and they'd like to share that experience. It could be a general discussion about the whole SMART program and how it works. It very much depends on the group and where they're at. But this is all done with a really nice sort of mutual agreement amongst everybody in the group. And the key to it is, when the group's up and running well and is understanding each other, the facilitator says very, very little. And that's the aim of it. You know you've had a good meeting if the facilitator doesn't talk too much.
And so from what you're saying, I'm so sorry.
No, sorry, go on.
So from what you're saying, there is conversation between the participants as opposed to exclusively with the facilitator.
Absolutely there is. The facilitator is there to do just that. They facilitate the interactions amongst the group. They may chip in and help with some experience they've had. They may have some information about a latest piece of research or evidence that they can contribute into the meeting. But generally speaking, we like it to be an open conversation. Some of our online meetings that have lots of participants, say 50 to 100, they may choose to rehearse or practice a particular tool. So in that case, the facilitator will show on the screen or in the room that tool and get a pen out, and the group will almost carry out like a workshop of how they would practice or use that tool. But generally speaking, yes, we like it to be conversation, and we like the facilitator to be there to be prompting participants rather than giving them a lecture of information or a presentation. It's not as kind of transactional as that. It's more fluid.
And are there some written materials that go with this?
There certainly are. So lots of our facilitators will have either kind of PowerPoint slides, or they will have a flip chart, or they'll have other guidance notes. And the purpose of that is lots of our tools are quite visual as well, and they're sort of pen to paper. And so any slides or flip charts or other information is sometimes used to demonstrate to the participants in the meeting what they mean when they're talking about the programme.
And for how long do people typically go to smart meetings? Do they go, as it were, forever, or does it tend to be more for a fixed period?
Yeah, there's a really interesting question, Simon, actually. And there's lots of debate and lots of different views on it. So one view is that SMART is for life, I've heard people say, or recovery is for life, or even 12-step is for life, whichever path people choose, they say it's for life, because essentially what you're looking at is fundamentally helping people to change their behaviour and have a more balanced life. So in one respect, the tools are there for life, and you can go to meetings for life if you want to. The other view is that, oh, absolutely no, it's not. So you may need to engage with your recovery programme a lot at the beginning, but eventually some people like to consider themselves as recovered in the past, and they want to leave recovery in the present behind. And so another view is that it's not for life. It gets you on your feet and empowers you in order to live a balanced life. And once you reach that stage, you don't necessarily need the meetings and the tools. I think there's probably truth in both. I don't think A or B is necessarily the right or wrong view. I don't think there is a right or wrong view. What we do know is the majority of people in stable recovery will attend a regular SMART meeting, say once a week, for about a year to 18 months before it then starts potentially to tail off. Others who really enjoy it and want to start to give back will train to become facilitators so they continue on doing it as well as their own recovery. So it's a real mixture. In one respect, the tools are for life, because what you learn about yourself and how to change your behaviours will hopefully, and they're designed to, stick for life. And like I said before, not everybody wants to keep going to recovery meetings for the rest of their life. However, the door's always open. It's always there for you. So it's very much an individual choice, how frequently people engage with us and for how long. So that's a way of saying there is no answer.
Thank you. And could you tell us just a little bit about the programme you run for the friends and family of people who are going through issues of addiction?
I would love to, Simon. Thank you. SMART has a big programme, which is self-management and recovery training for people with behaviours that are causing them problems, okay, and they can go to those as participants. But with each one of those individuals comes a network of some kind, family, friends, loved ones, acquaintances, colleagues, etc. And ideally, any recovery programme will acknowledge that. And when you're trying to teach people and help them to lead a balanced life, family, friends, colleagues, etc. is a really important part of that balance. So in SMART Recovery, we have a big programme called the Family and Friends Programme. It's based on our four-point programme, but it's been tailored and has brought in some craft methodology to help the loved ones of people with addiction.
Craft?
Craft is a form of CBT. And it's used it comes from Gabor Mate, etc., that use this, and Ellis around REBT as well.
REBT?
Oh, sorry. Let me bring it up for you. I'll just bring up a reference. I'm just aware that some readers might not be actually fully aware, so I want to get the acronym exactly right, and I can spell it out for you properly. One second. I don't want to get this wrong, you see. And I can, what we can do as well is we can put some links to these various programs and techniques. So Craft and REBT essentially look at the way your mind is working, and it helps to identify what's happening in your thoughts and feelings, and then it helps you to, adapt your behaviours, if you like, to match the other person. So REBT, let me get this right, is Rational Emotive Behaviour Therapy. They're fancy words or long acronyms for cognitive behavioural therapy approaches and techniques. I'll send you some links about this. Craft is, it looks at the community around you rather than at you yourself. So it's almost like an outside in, looking from the outside in kind of perspective. So the Family and Friends program uses that approach. It has tools in it exactly the same as the SMART program. And those tools are more aligned to what, to helping me in my role in how I support, look after, or have somebody with addiction in my life. So there are various tools. One great example is the hula hoop, which is where you help people to understand what's within their gift of control and what isn't. And that's a really good one for helping people with anxiety. If people are worrying too much about what other people are doing, if your loved one has an addiction or is in recovery, it helps you to put an imaginary hula hoop around yourself to try and reduce your distress, if you like, of what might be going on outside of your control. So Family and Friends is there in the same way as any other SMART program. It's free and open access for people. It is a mutual aid program just the same as well. So it will be the family and friends of people in addiction who come together in a meeting. So it's not with a SMART participant. It's a separate group that's just for them. It helps you to understand the role that you may or may not play in that other person's journey. It helps you to understand what's within your gift to change and what isn't. And it really helps you to understand how you can look after yourself, which is a really important part of it. And the beauty of it is it's mutual aid. So it's other people's family and friends will talk to each other about how things are going for them and what does and doesn't work, basically. And we have a network of these meetings all over the UK. In fact, we've got a network of meetings all over the world, but they're certainly all over the UK. They're happening online in Maine at the moment, but you may be able to find a face-to-face. And the two programs combined, so if you have a family where there are people in it who have problematic behaviours, if you have somebody attending a SMART program for themselves and the family or friends attending that program for themselves, when the two come together, it's enormously beneficial and really powerful. So it's almost like the mirror image, that's the word I've been searching for. It's like a mirror image of the SMART program for loved ones.
Thank you.
In a roundabout garbled fashion.
Thank you. No, that's very interesting. Do people have to choose between CBT and 12-step, or can they combine the two?
Not really. They don't have to make a hard and fast kind of final choice at all. So the answer is no, you don't have to choose between them at all. You can choose to do both, one or the other. The only way to really find out is to give them a go. So in SMART, we very much advocate for our own programme, obviously, but we also advocate that there's many, many different routes to gaining recovery. Everybody is completely different. One size does not fit all. Until you've tried them, you might not know through reading the literature or the books. You might not even know from listening to someone else that's been to a meeting. So the way I would guide people to choose or to find what works for them is to give the different methods a try and to discover for yourself which one may work better for you.
Some people do both.
Of course they do, actually. So we know that about a third of people will use different types of approaches. So about a third of people will use the 12-step programs as well as Smart Recovery. And they will either use them simultaneously or they will dip in and out of each one depending on where they're at in their recovery journey. So it isn't a case of once you're on one pathway, that's it for the rest of your life. You can move and change between them as you want to. And like I say, at certain times of your life or at a certain age, one type of program may just suit you better than another.
Thank you. So finally, please would you suggest a piece of music and tell us why you've chosen it?
Okay, thank you. So, well, I say thank you. It's been really difficult. I love music and I have a very, very eclectic taste in music, a very wide range of music. So I always find it really hard when someone asks me just to pick one. So all weekend, Simon, I've been listening to all kinds of music. And at first I thought, oh, I should really find something, you know, empowering and inspirational and all those great songs that are out there about, you know, discovering that you're human again and, you know, real positive. I can, you know, I can climb every mountain type of feeling. The more I listened to it, I thought, yep, that's all very well and good, but it all started to feel a bit utopian, really, in an ideal world, this is how it would be. And one song that lots of people are aware of, especially in the recovery space, is a song called Leave a Light On. And it was originally sung by a guy called Tom Walker, produced it or released it a while ago. And it's a great song about addiction and about, as a loved one, you know, you can leave a light on for somebody and I'm always here for you. And it's very empowering and inspirational and uplifting. And then I found a remix of it by a gentleman called Joey Oz, who is in recovery. He's American. And the remix is the beautiful song of Leave a Light On, interspersed with a rap, if you like, which is his side of that story. So I just find it's a really nice juxtaposition between the two sides of things, of a family, a friend, a loved one, having eternal hope for somebody. I'm always here. I'll leave a light on for you. You can do it. And then the cold, hard reality of that person who isn't ready for recovery yet or is desperately trying to seek help but isn't quite in the right frame of mind. And I guess my main message behind all of that is that we can be there for people and we can leave a light on. We can't enforce or force anyone to do anything, but all we can be is stand in the wings with love and compassion and wait for that person to be ready. And all we need to do is stand in the background and hold that light on and let them know that we're here for them as and when they're ready and that that light will never go off. That's the song that I've chosen and that particular remix.
Dr. Charlie Orton, thank you very much indeed for giving us your time today.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
The second someone mentioned you were all alone, I could feel the trouble coursing through your veins. Now I know it's gotta go. Just a phone call left unanswered had me sparking.
And our last conversation today is with my co-presenter, Billy. And Billy has experience of both 12-step and CBT-based therapies. And we're going to talk a little bit about the difference and the similarities and the differences. So, Billy, what is your experience, both of 12-step and of CBT?
You know, I've had experience with both. In early recovery in the rehab, the day program I was doing, we had speakers and I got introduced, an AA speaker woman came. And to be honest, I didn't hear anything about SMART then. This was like 10 years ago. So I started in AA. the woman who came to give the talk, excuse me, she was fantastic. And I thought, right, I want what she's got. And she became my friend sponsor. And I did AA for probably faithfully the first 5 years of my recovery. And for me, it worked really well. But I don't know, I also found it quite constraining, and I knew I had to do more than just go to a meeting. And I happened to stumble across SMART meetings. And once again, for me, it was just perfect in my progression in my sobriety, because then it became a very CBT focused on, you know, the changes I need to make, how to live a sober life on a daily basis now, and not just rely on rushing to a meeting. So they both had an important part to play, and still do. I mean, yes.
So for you, there is a benefit to combining both.
Yes, for me now, I will pop into an AA meeting if I'm invited or if I happen to be passing, but it's not my go-to thing anymore. Whereas SMART, I will really try and do do it often. Because one of the differences that I do like is the cross talk. It's a bit like a group therapy session, which I always think so useful, because you learn so much about yourself and from other people. And I, in this stage of my recovery, I prefer the interaction than just sort of sitting in a meeting and being told stuff.
So could you elaborate a little more on the common themes and perhaps some of the differences between the two approaches?
I mean, one thing about AA and NA and all the A's, there are lots of them. And if you're in first days of recovery, there's nothing better. You can spend your life in meetings, and that's a wonderful thing to have. And absolutely invaluable. And as I say, in my early recovery, that's about 10 years ago, there wasn't the option of SMART. But for me now in my recovery, I really do enjoy. I don't say I prefer, I just would go to a SMART meeting simply because I like the interaction with it. You know, the talking, comparing, it's like a group therapy session. I like it. You need to, you know, see, hear other people talk. And I don't know, it seems a bit more like a shared experience. And for me, in my later recovery, that became more important. But, you know, I am internally grateful to AA, and I still go, not as often as I should. But they are two very different approaches. And thank goodness we have those two different approaches. You know, the more choice to stay sober, the better.
So you would characterize the interaction, the crosstalk, I think it's called in the jargon,
yes,
of CBT-based therapies, and of which SMART is one, as being the principal difference.
Yes, I think that is the principal difference. I mean, I think we mentioned earlier what was very nice for early recovery was you had a sponsor, someone to drag you to places.
This is in 12 steps.
In 12 steps, which I think is a bonus.
Could you describe the role of a sponsor a little more?
I mean, my sponsor, she was wonderful. She was the type of person who would phone me in the morning and say, right, it's time to get up. There's a meeting at 11. I want to see you there. Whereas I would, you know, I wasn't very motivated to do anything. And in early recovery, that was really useful to have that slight motivation, having the commitment, because you get commitments as well, you know, like go and make tea and stuff. And I can remember the first year, 6 months of being sober, this is my tea station. I'm making the tea. It gives you a sense of, you know, belonging and well-being. But for me, as I say, the longer you get sober, the less meetings I go to. And I was looking for something else. And SMART just happened to fit that. There was more interaction, more cross-talk, as they say. And, yeah, it seemed to suit me better. But, yeah, both are fabulous.
Thank you. And what advice would you give to somebody who's looking to make an informed choice between the two?
I would say go to both. Go to both. Go to AA or NA or any of the A's. Have a go and go to a couple of SMART meetings. I personally think have both in your life. But make an informed choice. Go to either. And now there are many more SMART meetings, so you do have a choice of, you know, going to them.
Thank you. That's very, very informative. I greatly appreciate it. So finally, could you give us perhaps your choice of a piece of music and tell us what it means to you?
I was listening to some music the other day and it just happened to cross my path. Here We Go Again by Fleetwood Mac. And yes, I remember playing that in the days of madness, being out there using and, oh God, chaos. But now I can listen to that pleasurably and enjoy the music with the sunshine in my face and being sober and sane. Well, let's not go too far, but just enjoying the music with a whole different outlook. It's lovely to find things like that. So that's my choice for today.
Really, thank you. Here's Fleetwood Mac. That's just about it for today, I think. Billy, thank you very much for your assistance today and for helping for sharing your own experience.
My absolute pleasure.
And we hope you enjoyed it too. We hope that that'll help for those of you who are deciding on your approach to recovery. And we look forward to you joining us for our next program here in this series. Thank you very much indeed. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to our podcast today. If you'd like to leave us any feedback, you can email us at speakup@advocacyproject.org.uk, or you can go to our website, www.advocacyproject.org.uk/speakupradio. That's all one word. Thanks so much for listening, and do let us know what you thought.